A few days ago, I was sitting with a group of new believers in Turkey. And one of them asked me a very fascinating question. He said, I'm just learning about Christianity, but he said, one of the things I do know is that 2,000 years ago, Turkey was very much the center of the great expansion of the Christian church. And he said, now, if you look for believers and followers of Jesus in Turkey, you have to look for a very, very long time, and you'll find very, very few people. And his question was simply this: what happened? What happened? I don't think anybody has ever asked me that question specifically in such a manner. And so I had to think rather quickly. And then I said to him, well, I think one of the things we need to understand is this, that many of the epistles in the New Testament were actually addressed to individual churches in individual cities, and a number of those cities were in Turkey. We were in ancient Galatia at the time we were actually speaking. And I said, even though these epistles were written just 3 or 4 decades after Christ returned to glory, it's very obvious from those epistles that a certain decline was already in evidence in the churches that Paul had planted. Then I said, if you go on a little further into the book of Revelation, written about 100 years after the birth of Christ, what do you find? You find that Christ dictated 7 letters to churches, all of which are in Turkey, and none of which are existing at the present time. And in every one of those letters, Jesus commends them, but he also points out to them that there are some things that he's got against them. And there was moral and spiritual decline in those churches even then. Now, this, to my mind, is a very, very solemn, serious thought, that thriving churches that are relatively new can very, very quickly go into decline. In fact, some people have said, rather gloomily, I'm afraid, that the church is never more than 1 generation away from extinction. And if that is true, then how much we need to be on our guard in our individual lives and in the corporate life, or the church, the body of Christ. But then I went on even further and said to my Turkish friends, my new believing Turkish friends, I said to them, you know, it wasn't just that there was a moral and spiritual declension in the churches in Turkey, but I said, Christian history shows that there seems to be a process that goes on, that the gospel comes to an area, that it has resounding success, that a church is planted and thrives and goes into decline. We were already identifying the fact that that had happened in Greece and in Turkey. It also happened in North Africa. And then, of course, the gospel came to Europe. But if you go to Europe today, it's a huge story of spiritual and moral decline. And the reality is that the church is in decline in North America at the present time. Now, all is not gloomy. In actual fact, the church is dramatically in the ascendancy in South America. That is also the case in Africa. And of course, we really don't know to what extent the church is growing exponentially in China and possibly among the Dalits of India as well. What we need to be doing here in the North American continent and in the Western world in general is asking ourselves, what really is the scene as far as the church is concerned here? I think the scene is one where there is a turning away from an understanding of the significance of the church in the purposes of God. And there are numerous reasons for this. So I want to highlight one of them for you. Let me tell you one of my favorite stories. It's the story of a man who was on a desert island. And he had been there on his own for 25 years. And then one day, to his intense delight, he saw a ship come into the lagoon. And he rushed down to the beach, waved his shirt furiously to get their attention. They came ashore, and the seaman said, "We're amazed to see you here. We thought this was an uninhabited island." I said, "No, it's not uninhabited. I'm here. How many other people are here?" And he said, "Well, I'm the only one." They said, "Well, how long have you been on the island?" He said, 25 years. 25 years on your own? He said, 25 years on my own. So they said, "Well, this is amazing. What are all these big buildings here?" "Well," he said, "I'm a builder by trade, and I have 25 years to do nothing. So I've just been doing what I do best, building buildings." They said, "Well, what's that building over there?" He said, "That's my house." "It's a huge house." He said, "I build huge houses." "It's amazing. What's that building next to it?" "Oh," he said, "that's the church I go to." He said, "Well, that's a huge church. How many people in the congregation?" He said, "I'm the only person on the island." He said, "Wow, I've never seen anything like that. What's that building on the other side of your house?" Oh, that, he said, "that's nothing. That's the church I used to go to." Now, you see why that's my favorite story? It makes you laugh. Now I want to spoil it. Why is it funny? Why is that funny? Now, I'm not going to make you laugh and then beat you over the head for laughing. But I think we need to ask ourselves, why is it funny? Well, we need to get into a serious discussion on humor, which I love to do, but not now. What is it that makes us react to something in laughter? Well, very often it's shock value. It's surprise value. But quite frequently it is to have the ludicrous, the nonsensical revealed to us as well. And there's something ludicrous and there's something nonsensical about this guy who lives on his own, has built his own church, but leaves it and goes to another one. What's ludicrous about that? Well, first of all, it's ludicrous to think you can have a church of one. That is an impossibility. To even suggest that is to show a fundamental ignorance as to what the church is. But also the idea of this person leaving a church when he's the only one there, presumably because he doesn't get along with the other members of the church, which points out something to us, that church is actually something to do with relationships. Something to do with relationships. But I think the big thing that I'm concerned about here is this, that to say that is the church I used to go to is tantamount to saying that church is somewhere we go. And if we say that church is somewhere we go, then that betrays a fundamental misunderstanding of church as well. And here's the thesis that I want to share with you. Church is not somewhere we go. Church is something we are. Now, if that is true, if church is not somewhere we go, church is something we are, then the two questions that automatically come to my mind are, well, what are we? What are we? Then the second question is, and how are we doing? What are we, and how are we doing? I believe that one of the reasons for the decline of the church, both historically and as we see it now in the country in which we live at the present time, I believe one of the reasons for it is this: a fundamental misunderstanding on the nature of the church. Hear people talk about the church, and you'll hear them saying this: which church do you go to? Oh, that's the church we used to go to. Or you should come to our church sometime. Well, I hear they've got a new preacher at that church. Yeah, but the music over here is great. So sometimes we go there, and sometimes we go here. Whatever happened to the idea of church is something we are? And I believe that that is at the root of much of the decline in the church to be seen historically and at the present time in different parts of the world. Now, where in the world did we get the idea that church is somewhere we go? And the answer to that question, of course, is the same answer as we have to a lot of things about what happened in Christianity over the centuries. And the answer is Constantine, the Emperor Constantine. You remember that up until the time of Constantine, the beginning of the 4th century AD, that the Christian church had gone through periods of intense persecution. But then Constantine had a spiritual experience and became a follower of Jesus. And he introduced something called the Edict of Milan. The Edict of Milan legalized the Christian church. And suddenly, the persecution of Christians was banned in the Roman Empire. And overnight, things changed utterly dramatically and diametrically from what they had been. This, of course, meant that many more people were prepared to openly profess Christ, and larger numbers of believers began to congregate. But there was a problem, and it was simply this: there's nowhere to put them. Nowhere to put them. Up until that time, church was not somewhere you go. Up until that time, we are told that the church was simply little communities of people who met wherever they could. There was no building. It was Constantine who said, with all these new numbers and this new freedom, you need to have buildings. And so he pointed out that there was a building for common use in the Roman cities of the time called the Basilica. And the Basilica became the places where the believers would congregate. And that's where the idea of church as somewhere you go originated. Up until that time, if you had met one of the followers of Jesus, or even Jesus himself, or the Apostle Paul, and said, this is the church we go to, which one do you go to? You'd have got blank looks. Church was not somewhere you go. We read in the scriptures that some of the epistles were addressed to the church that meets in your house. So obviously it wasn't an edifice that they went to. The church was something that met. The church was also something that was capable of reading letters that were addressed to them. For some of the epistles in the New Testament are written specifically to the church. And the church is encouraged. The church is rebuked. The church is instructed. Well, you can't do any of those things to a building. The situation was that the church was recognized as a community of people that gathered at certain times for specific purposes, not to be confused with the building. Now, you can see where we're going with this. If church is somewhere we go, it's somewhere we can stop going. It's somewhere we can go occasionally. But if church is something we are, we can't stop being what we are. And we can't be what we are occasionally. It's an entirely different mindset. Church isn't somewhere we go. Church is something we are. Jesus put it very, very straightforwardly. When he was commissioning Simon Peter to his remarkable ministry, and he gave him the keys of the kingdom, and he He gave him authority and all kinds of other things. He said, "Now, your name is Simon, rock. And on this rock," he said, "I will build my church. I will build my church." Well, Jesus was a carpenter, not a bricklayer. He wasn't going to be laying concrete blocks and finishing up with a cathedral. What was he talking about? He was talking about building people into a community that would be indwelt by God himself through his Spirit. That's who we are. That's who we are. To lose sight of that and to simply see church as somewhere we go and somewhere we go and sometimes we go, etc., etc., is to totally miss the point. Now, does it matter? Some of you may think, "Well, Stuart, it's no big deal." Okay, so church isn't somewhere we go. Church is something we are. I would submit to you it does matter, and it does matter very much indeed. I remember when I was a kid hearing people talk about the church that they went to, and there was a beautiful church in our home that the believers that my parents belonged to didn't go to that big church. I used to look longingly at that big church building. It had a beautiful spire, and it had its own grounds, and it had a beautiful sweeping driveway up to it, and magnificent oak doors leading up to it. I never even got to walk up that driveway. And I used to look longingly at those oak doors and think, "I wonder what goes on inside there," but we weren't allowed to go. But the kids who went there, they said, "That is the house of God. That is the house of God." Now, if church is somewhere we go, and the church we go to is the house of God, guess what? We go to visit God occasionally. And then we leave God in his building, and we can go about our ordinary lives without worrying too much about God. And there is the danger. If church is somewhere we go, and where we go is God's house, then we know exactly where we've got God. And actually, we have actually made the place for him. In other words, we are dictating terms to God. One little boy who apparently had been brought up in a family who told him that the church building was God's house came up to me one day, and apparently he was a little bit confused because I was the guy who was up front. And he came up to me and he asked me a very simple question. He said, "Are you God? Are you God?" Now, there's some people who've accused me of that kind of attitude, but I hastened to encourage him. "No, no, no, that is not the case." But it's logical, isn't it? If church is somewhere we go and where we go is the house of God, the guy who seems to be in charge there, he must be God. There's a 13-year-old girl that Jill has a correspondence with. She loves writing to kids of that age. And this little girl wrote to her one day and she said, "If God is everywhere, why do I have to go to church?" I would say that's a pretty reasonable question. Well, is God everywhere? Yes. Well, then how in the world can he have a house that we go and visit him in occasionally? Now, when Solomon built his temple, he knew this. Even at the prayer of dedication, Solomon said very straightforwardly, "The heaven of the heavens can't contain you. And this house that I have built you can't possibly contain you." And then you remember 1,000 years later, Stephen got himself into trouble and gave a brilliant defense of his position to people who a few minutes later murdered him. You remember what he says? He said, "The Most High does not live in building made with men's hands." No, that's not church. And the church that Jesus was going to build was not this kind of a building. Well, what are we then? We are a called out community. We are the people of God. We are the ones whom God is pulling together and recreating into something entirely new to be caught up in his eternal purposes. But if church is somewhere we go, we may have little or no concept of that at all. There's a drift in America at the present time away from church attendance. The problem with drift away from church attendance is this, that if we do not see ourselves as that unique community of the called and become increasingly casual in our involvement in that community of the called, it's only a matter of time until we will find an erosion of belief, an erosion of spiritual disciplines, an erosion of the things that hold us fast in this community. And that is the danger that we're facing at the present time. Now, let me just finish on a positive note here. What is it that Jesus actually said to Simon Peter? Well, after Simon Peter had made his great confession, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," and Jesus said to him, "Simon, you're right, and you didn't figure it out on your own. My Father in heaven revealed it to you, and your name is Simon, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it," etc., etc. What was Jesus saying? He was saying, the church is something that belongs to me. I will build my church. And not only I will build my church, but I will build it. And there are two fundamental things that we need to remember about the community of faith that we call the church. Number one, it belongs uniquely to Christ. And number two, it is something that he and only he is capable of building. Those are the two fundamental things that I have had to hold on to down through many, many years and every conceivable type of experience in churches around the world. I keep remembering that the church is God's idea. I keep remembering that the church is something that belongs uniquely to Jesus. I keep remembering that the church is something that he and only he is capable of building. And he has promised that he will continue to build his church. Then there's the wonderful statement that he made, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. What does that mean? Well, the gates of hell probably means is probably a graphic description of death itself. And perhaps Jesus was referring to the fact that even the death of Peter would not stop the building of the church. But more importantly than that, even the death of Jesus himself would not stop the building of the church. In actual fact, nothing, even death itself, can stop God doing what he's going to do. And that is build his church out of living stones who are drawn into an experience of Christ and are knit together in order that they might become a building in which God lives by his Spirit. Church is not somewhere we go. Church is something we are. To move away from that fundamental concept is to contribute greatly to the decline and the deterioration of the life of the church, and eventually in the practical experience of the church. Now, even though I've said the church is in decline in certain parts of the world, it is. Overall, the church is growing exponentially. The sad thing is, where it's in decline, people are missing out on what God is actually doing. So there's my thesis. We'll follow on that in further sessions. Church is not somewhere we go. Church is something we are.